At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063. The game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. Got a lot to get to coming up for the next hour. Corey Curtis will join us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Titans coaching search with him. Preds with a big weekend and a back-to-back set. We'll get into that coming up here in just a few minutes. And Alabama football as a new head coach as well. We'll get your thoughts on all that at 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, my beloved Green Bay Packers destroyed the Cowboys yesterday. It was beautiful. I enjoyed every last second of it. And now the question of what the future looks like for the Cowboys is a big one today, and that's all the networks and everything is going to be talking about leading up to the wild card games today. You know, I saw John Glennon, our friend, put this out last night from Bet Online. The odds to be the next Cowboys head coach. At the top of the list is Bill Belichick with 1-2 odds. He's the heavy favorite. Right after that is Mike Vrabel at 3-1 odds. The two heavy favorites for the Cowboys job, Belichick at number one and Mike Vrabel at number two. Should the Cowboys decide to park ways with Mike McCarthy, which I think a lot of people expect to happen today. So what do you make of that job, Joe, with everything that goes on around it, that quarterback in Dak Prescott, and the idea of either a Belichick or a Vrabel being the one to take over if, in fact, McCarthy is fired today by Jerry Jones?
Well, hiring Bill Belichick seems very much like a Jerry Jones move right in this situation.
It does.
And I didn't really know this, but I've seen some NFL reporters and some folks in Dallas putting out there, you know, that Belichick and Jerry Jones have become close over the years, have a good relationship. I mean, it's interesting. It doesn't mean nothing. So I guess if that's the thing, it's like we've been talking here about the Titans and do they need to get one of these offensive guys? And obviously McCarthy is a play calling offensive head coach. So, you know, does Jerry, I'm trying to imagine even like what Belichick has done in New England and then that, like meshing with the way Jerry Jones runs the Cowboys. That's an interesting thought all on its own. But I do think also when you look at this job, I have to bring the Falcons into the conversation because it's been reported there that Arthur Blank is kind of looking for maybe more of an established coach, right? So I wonder if Belichick is going to happen in Dallas, because there's been a lot of smoke about Belichick in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Is it almost like the owner who thinks that way, like, you know, like Belichick is, this is like for me at college, you know, Belichick is Harvard and then Princeton is your safety school, you know?
Yes.
So Vrabel is Princeton. He's the safety school. Is he Atlanta's sort of, if they can't get Belichick, they'll take Vrabel. But then also it was really interesting with that, just in terms of, you know, you just had a Vrabel disciple as your head coach. But obviously just one more opening, if it happens, like we all expect it to happen, you know, increases the chances of Vrabel being hired. And by the way, there's some people I've seen a lot of like, hey, everybody thinks Vrabel's so awesome. He hasn't even been hired yet. Well, nobody's getting hired right now.
There's been one person hired. That's because it was written into his contract.
Exactly. I mean, everybody has to go through the same process. And the thing is, teams don't have to ask permission to talk to Vrabel. So I do think that you're going to see his name here in connection with at least two or three of these jobs coming up here.
What do you think about Prescott? Because, you know, last season he did not have a good year and the turnovers were a problem. And we talked about those things. There have been some playoff games where he has not played well. And you can go ahead and add another one to the list yesterday with a couple of interceptions, including a pick six. Did not play well yesterday. I mean, look, he ends up throwing the ball like 57 times. So the yardage and all those things look good, but he was not good yesterday. And there's no question about it. He's, for the most part, had a great year. I mean, he's in the conversation for league MVP. So it's not like he can't play, but I do wonder, like, how does Jerry Jones and how would a new head coach view the idea of Dak Prescott being their quarterback?
That's a great question. I mean, it really, you know, he's good, but yeah, like some of the misses and then some of the mistakes, yeah, that game. Look, I don't know if the Cowboys were going to get any stops anyway, but obviously when you give the Packers that kind of a lead because of horrific mistakes throwing the football, I mean, you have no chance. And I'd like to see that game played out without that, but he did that. And I feel like there's a lot of teams that are kind of in that, like, you have a good quarterback, you know, but is he good enough? I mean, so much of this still is what you put around the quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of teams, you know, the Vikings and Cousins, if they're going to bring him back, and even like the Lions and Goff, but good, you know, but is that the long-term answer for your franchise? And then how does that relate to interviewing a coach? I still think a coach would look at Dallas and say, man, really like the roster. Now they got a couple guys coming up for big deals. And yes, that is going to hurt their roster because they're going to have to shed some good players, not the top players. They're going to have to shed some good players to sign people. But still, they've got tremendous talent overall, I would say, on that roster. So I think that's an attractive job, but yeah, what is Dak? I mean, I think I'd probably carry forward with him, but you know, maybe, you know, like if you're Dallas, would you be interested in a Cousins?
I mean, it's an interesting question because like Dak is, when Dak's on, I mean, you can win. I think you can win a Super Bowl if he's on. The problem is like, is he going to be on in the playoffs? Right. Yeah. Because I mean, so far he hasn't been. So like how long of a runway of a sample size do you get, especially in that place where there's so much scrutiny, so much attention and an owner. And they were talking about this on the broadcast yesterday, on the post game part of it, like with Strahan and all those guys, which I think it's a good point. Like Jerry Jones is what, 81 years old. Like his patience is not going to be very long. Like he wants to win another Super Bowl. So how does that all factor into it? And then I started thinking about Vrabel, Joe, like the partnership of a Mike Vrabel with an owner like Jerry Jones. What do we think that could be? Like what sort of dynamic does that look like if it's not Belichick and Vrabel is a serious candidate for the Cowboys job, should it come open? It's an interesting theoretical partnership there.
I mean, he looked good in that Cowboy hat, man.
He did. You know,
let's not forget that. Unnamed texter says, I don't see Vrabel to the Cowboys. Jones won't give up that much control. Well, I mean, if Belichick is a candidate, that would – here's the thing. Vrabel asked for it, was denied. I do not think Mike Vrabel's like full control or else I'm not coming to your franchise. I think he wants to go to a place where he feels good about the personnel side of things. He hasn't earned the right to just say, yep, I get full control. Now, Belichick, that's a really interesting situation with Belichick. Is he going to be like, hey, I'm a football coach. I'm ball coaching it, and, you know, we don't have to do what we did in New England. Look, Bill Belichick wants to break, I would assume, wants to break Don Shula's all-time wins record.
Yeah.
Dallas would give him that opportunity, and I think he wants to, obviously kind of redeem himself. I don't know if you read the great piece by Wickersham and those, all those, Don Van Natt, all those guys who were around the Patriots forever. I mean, Belichick told Kraft, Brady's toast.
Yeah, which we all assumed, but that's the first time I had seen it like actually written that way.
And that, I know people are absolutely dunking on him for that, and I get it. Man, I was there that night up there when the Titans made him look like just an absolute shell of a quarterback. But again, it goes to tell you, too, if you don't have good stuff around your quarterback, which the Patriots didn't at that time, you know, I mean, anybody can look bad. But it's amazing that he was, like, with him daily all those years and was like, yeah, he's toast. And then Brady does what he did in Tampa. Amazing. Like, no one knows crap. You know, that's really the lesson, isn't it? None of the, even the people who are in it, who are the absolute top of the line and football minds and all that stuff, they still don't know a damn thing about what's going to happen.
Let the record show, I wanted Tom Brady to be the Titans quarterback that offseason, which means I am smarter than Bill Belichick and smarter than Joe Rexrod. Write it down.
Well, you're done. Well, the second part, we already knew that. But, yes, I think you got a claim over Belichick.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the idea of Mike Vrabel to the Cowboys, which I think could be a very interesting fit. Big weekend for the Nashville Predators as well. We'll get into that coming up next. Tune in to 102.5 The Game this Wednesday night for Vanderbilt men's basketball. Commodores at home taking on Auburn. Tip off at 8 o'clock, pregame beginning at 7:30. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
As we're moving into the second half here, are you feeling games around the league starting to tighten up a little bit as we get closer to the All-Star break?
For sure, for sure. You know, this month is kind of, you know, it's kind of the separation of where you're at. It's kind of like Friday in golf, you know. This is part of the season where you're slamming your trunk or you're playing on Saturday, and we're in that moment right now. So it's we're going on a hard road trip here. We got a tough schedule to get to that little break and refresh. So every game means something for us, and these are where it's moving day all through the league.
As Andrew Brunette, Saturday night after the Preds took down the New York Islanders, a beautiful golf analogy there, which I, for one, appreciated. Talking about it being moving day, and it's kind of like Friday in golf. Teams are either slamming their trunk shut right now, or they're playing on Saturday and looking to close things out here. What a weekend for the Predators, Joe. They go on the road Friday night to Dallas, and they win 6-3, which, by the way, I broke the curse. I got on the board to Preds pick to click. I was the first one to do it. And then yes, everybody else did too. The listener, you, and Keezer all scored after that to get on the board. But I broke the curse on a Friday night for Preds pick to click. Preds get a huge win in Dallas, 6-3. And then a last second win pretty much on Saturday night at home. Alex Carrier with a goal with about 7.9 seconds remaining in regulation. And then an empty netter after that to salt it away. But two wins in a back-to-back situation for the Predators. That was a huge weekend for that group.
Huge. By the way, weren't Keezer and I both empty netters?
Yes. Right? Yes, we were. Yes. It counts for something.
Very frustrating.
But at least you got on the board. Now, that's a big-time response in Dallas. And, you know, it's interesting that Lankinen gets that start. Of course, he had played well there a week earlier. But still, two-day break, and it kind of, right? I mean, to me, that kind of says something. Doesn't it say something to you? Like,
yeah,
a little bit of like, let UC Soros just chill a little bit. Now, of course, you knew you had a back-to-back. He was playing. I think for him, maybe more than anyone, like that Saturday result is significant to just, you know, they got to get him rolling. I mean, the schedule ahead is treacherous. I mean, this is the rest of this month is very road heavy, west heavy, against really good teams, of course, today in Vegas. So it's a huge weekend for them to get 4 points, two regulation wins going into that. But boy, we're going to find out a lot about this team.
Oh, they got some big boys coming up. Vegas today, LA on Thursday. You got Florida next week at home. Edmonton, who has won 10 in a row. The week after that, like they we're going to find out a lot about this team over the next couple of weeks here. Look, I thought the Dallas game, they played great. That may have been their best game of the year. I mean, they put up 38 shots. You know, the thing that stood out to me was there were a couple moments in the game where Dallas either cut it to one goal or started to take over a little bit, and the Predators shut the door on them. They would either come back down the other side of the ice and score, or they would have a great defensive play to kind of end a shift I just thought they did a really good job of managing the lead and playing with it on Friday. And then, look, Saturday, they didn't have their best stuff. I thought they were a little tired, a little slow out there. And the Islanders, I thought, did a great job of clamping down defensively. But you stuck with it. UC Saros played great in that game. And what a goal. You know, it's not like a highlight reel goal or anything, but what a moment for Evangelista. They had to have one on the power play. And to have a young guy come through in a moment like that, I thought was big. And then you get a lucky break to go your way for the game winner, and you end up with 4 points out of a possible four on a back-to-back set. Heading into this road trip to get that result, I thought was really big. And I think a kind of a growth weekend for the Predators of handling the game the way that they did in Dallas on the road, and then finding a way to stick in there and gut one out against the Islanders.
Yeah, no doubt. We do like every week at The Athletic, it's like, you know, basically one question about all the teams, you know. And for the Preds, it was basically like, what's the biggest surprise, like pleasant surprise, and then, you know, disappointment or whatever. And for disappointment, I put, you know, the young guy production just hasn't been great. And, you know, you wonder a little bit about guys hitting the wall, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get Novak coming out, Parsonen coming out. You got Evangelista with the big one against the Islanders. So, I mean, just on that front, it's a big deal to get some of that, you know, some of that secondary production from those guys.
Well, they have been, especially the last few weeks here, they've been a one-line team, right? Like, they've had other guys chip in here or there, but not consistently enough. And it's been O'Reilly, Nyquist, and Forsberg that have had to carry the load offensively. It's nice to see some other guys starting to step up right now. And one thing I thought was also a really good development over the weekend. Not that he's been bad, because I think some people have been talking about that this year, and I don't really know what they're talking about. But Roman Josi, I thought, was outstanding on Friday night against the Stars. And look, he got injured in the game, took a really hard hit into the boards, gutted through it, stayed with it, picked up three assists. If you missed like the Forsberg goal on Friday night, the play that Josi made on that goal was just outrageous. I thought he was unbelievable in that game, which is a really good development.
No, he was dominant in that game. He looked vintage, and yes, that now the pass to him from the corner also made that possible.
Oh yeah,
but I mean, you have Forsberg, who could have walked the puck into the net at that point. I mean, he was like, "Yeah, I'll shoot right there." Okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah, no, it was a great win on the road. And then look, we'll see on the Saros front, right? Like I thought, number one, I thought the Predators did a decent job of defending, but there were a couple of breakdowns they had against the Islanders, and when they had them, Saros was there to make a save. So I would assume he's going to play today against Vegas. Was Saturday night the beginning of something? I mean, look, he struggled. His save percentage heading into that game was below 900. And honestly, I've not checked to see where it is right now. But he's not been the UC Saros that we've been accustomed to seeing. And could Saturday night, the way that he played in that game, be kind of the start of something? We've seen it. You know, he can go on runs where he carries the team along with him. And, yeah, after that game the other night, he's back above 900, kind of that Mendoza line there. But, you know, Vegas obviously is a really good team. They're defending Stanley Cup champions. They've played really well this year. They're going to give you everything you can handle offensively. I would assume at Saros tonight, can he follow it up with another good performance on the road?
Yeah, 901 with a 302 goals against. So this is another one of those. If you told me, you know, if you told me at this point in the year, those are his numbers. And also, like you just said, basically that they've got one line they can count on without maybe necessarily looking at those numbers. If he just told me, gave me those two pieces of information, there is no way I have the Preds with the record they have right now. No way.
No, I'm totally with you. I got a text that says Preds getting at least 4 of 6 points on this upcoming road trip would be the most ideal. And with young guys starting to heat up in LA and Vegas slumping a bit, that's probably not too much to ask. I mean, if you got 4 out of 6 on this road trip, Joe, I think you definitely sign up for that. I think included in that, I mean, look, Vegas is going to be at the top of their division in some order. LA, I think, is really good. They've had some injuries and some goalie trouble lately, but I think they're good. You got to beat Arizona on Saturday. Like, you start to look at the standings, and at this point, Joe, Edmonton's going to be in. Like, Edmonton has gone on such a run right now that they're going to be in. You're technically ahead of them in the wild card, but they've played four less games than you have. Right now, to me, it's about, if you're the Predators, holding off Seattle, holding off Calgary, holding off St. Louis, and holding off Arizona. Like, Minnesota's gone in the tank. They got that initial burst under John Hines, and they've been terrible lately. So you got four teams behind you right now if you're the Predators that you got to find a way to hold off.
Yeah, and by the way, how in the world did the Oilers set the record with 10 straight? You got to be kidding me.
I couldn't believe
that
either.
How is that possible?
I couldn't believe it. Like, I thought
Gretzky, that's a misprint, right?
I thought Gretzky's team would have rolled off 15 or 20 at one point. I couldn't believe that stat.
I mean, they were completely overwhelming. That's amazing. But, I mean, think about that team, how bad it was for that team early. Like, bad. Like, they were, like, the biggest – I mean, it was like a disaster every day with that team.
Yeah.
And look at, what if they just had a so-so start, you know? But the bottom line is they're going to be in, and they're going to be a problem in a team that I think can win it all.
We'll find out, but they certainly look good right now. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Alabama Crimson Tide have a new head football coach. What do we make of that hire? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
2 days after the national championship, I shared with the team last night that, you know, I woke up that morning and I probably felt a lot like they did a couple weeks ago. An ache in your heart, just that pain and just knowing that you've come so close and decided to, you got to pick yourself up. And if you want to truly be a champion, you got to go sometimes through these hard moments because it's what's going to make you better.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. That was Kalen DeBoer, new head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide, at his press conference the other day. Goes from Washington to Alabama. And Joe, it was an interesting coaching search. You had, you know, Dan Lanning tweeting out, or I guess Oregon football, tweeting out this nice video of how Dan Lanning was staying, and that if your coach was leaving and you wanted to come play football, just come on down to Oregon because they're staying there. Mike Norvell at Florida State ends up with a huge new deal, and they tweeted out their own hype video as well about Mike Norvell staying. So eventually this thing gets down to Kalen DeBoer and him being the next head coach at Alabama, taking the reins from Nick Saban. Look, I think he's a good coach. So I think this is a good hire for Alabama, with the understanding that I think Alabama fans are probably going to have to get on board with at some point that nobody's going to be Nick Saban and nobody's going to have the success that Nick Saban had. But I think of the options available to them, I think Kalen DeBoer is a good hire. I am interested, Joe, to see how the recruiting goes for him and his staff in the SEC, because it's a different animal in the SEC. But I think overall a good hire for Alabama. What did you make of that move?
Yeah, look, the guy's an exceptional coach. So frankly, wasn't all that familiar with him at all till last year. Well, not, I wasn't at all. I'm sure most people could say the same before last year. But you look at what he did, all he does is win a lot immediately wherever he goes. So I've seen the comparison made, and I know Auburn fans love this, you know, because obviously when Brian Harsin was hired, there was a lot of talk about, well, bringing in a guy from outside and all that stuff. You know, yeah. Look, Brian Harsin was a good coach. He was, went 7-5 at Arkansas State, and then he was 69-19 at Boise State. He did a good job there. Wasn't the same standard that the program had previously had. He was good. He was not what Kalen DeBoer has been at Washington. So let's dispense with that. But at the same time, I totally agree with you. Like, the recruiting landscape, that's where Lanning was perfect, right? Because Lanning had very significant success at another big-time program, and also he has roots in the SEC. So he's got a lot of contacts and relationships that you just pick right up. And Kalen DeBoer is going to have to figure that out. Again, this is, to me, we're going to find out if Nick Saban has made Alabama recession-proof. But also, if you're not quite, I mean, Alabama is going to be in the playoff now, right? I mean, it's a 12-team playoff. I mean, if you're not in that, you're totally fired. I mean, you are so fired. But can he maintain that standard? And if he's just not quite there, but they're still really, really good, they're in there competing, how much, what's the patience level with him? You know, like, it's just, it's a really fascinating situation. For the most part, I would say don't be, you know, don't be the person who follows the legend. You know, be the person who follows the person who follows the legend. So all these coaches who got extensions now are like, okay, as soon as DeBoer gets fired in 3 years, then now I'm ready for that job. But he's awfully good. It's going to be really interesting to see how he meshes with that world. I tell you what, you know, first of all, Robbie, and I know I'm just rambling. I apologize right now for my rambling.
You go right ahead.
I just have all these thoughts, including, and I'm going to credit Ryan Shumpert from Rocky Top Insider. By the way, if you're a Vols fan, check out Rocky Top Insider and Shumpert. He does a really good job. You know, the third Saturday in October is all South Dakota now. It's DeBoer and Heupel, South Dakota dudes coaching Tennessee and Alabama. How
the
wild
ratings
is that?
In South Dakota for that game are going to be off the charts, baby. Off the charts.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes. I almost said Fargo. That's North Dakota. Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls is just going to be up in arms.
I mean, by the third Saturday in October, it'll be snowing up there like it is outside our house right now. So just sit back and watch Tennessee and Alabama play, baby. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. So, look, he doesn't have, you know, he's obviously been rooted out west. So I get the trepidation. But the bottom line is Michael Penix, you know, the Vols blew it. Jeremy Pruitt blew it, you know, when he said he didn't want him. And he was a good player at Indiana. He was taken to a completely different level in that offense. And, yes, with NFL receivers catching his passes, by the way. So I'm really in the short term, and I've been talking to some of my Bama fan friends over the weekend, in the short term, including Munson, I'm fascinated to see what he can do with Jalen Milroe next year, because I think he could be a Heisman candidate. What can Kalen DeBoer in 1 year do with Milroe?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. There are a couple like offshoots of this that are intriguing to me. Number one, you know, it's not been some mass exodus to this point for, as far as the Alabama roster is concerned. Now, Isaiah Bond is going to Texas. So Isaiah Bond gets in the transfer portal from Alabama. He ends up at Texas. So, look, I think he's a pretty good player. So that's a big loss for Alabama. I mean, he's not, you know, Julio Jones or Jerry Jeudy or anything like that, but I think it's a big loss for Alabama that way, and I think it's a good fit for him in Texas. The other part of this that nobody's really talking about, but I think is pretty interesting to see where he's gonna land. So Will Rogers is quarterback at Mississippi State. He enters the transfer portal and transfers to Washington, to the point where Rogers is, he's on the sideline with Washington in the national championship game. And then DeBoer leaves and Rogers immediately hops back into the transfer portal, and we'll see where he ends up. But that's a fascinating journey for Will Rogers. And I'm glad that they gave him his jersey and he was sitting there on the sideline watching what he thought was going to be his future team playing a national title game, only to hop in the transfer portal again a few days later.
Yeah, that's, man, it's wild. The coaches whine about the players going all over the place, and boy, they sure jump at the jobs when they get a chance to make a ton of money. Not that I can blame Kalen DeBoer at all, but is it possible that he could go to Bama? Will Rogers?
I mean, I had a Bama buddy asking me about that yesterday. And basically his thought process was like, I would take Will Rogers over Jalen Milroe. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's close. Like, Will Rogers is good. I certainly think, you know, if you put better talent than he had at Mississippi State around him, that he could play really well. But if I'm Will Rogers, like, I'm going somewhere that hopefully is good, but also, you know, you could start.
Like, if you're Kalen DeBoer, I'd love to have him transfer. And I'm not even sure. Who else is still there, the young guys at Bama? Because I can't even keep up with the portal.
Well, Simpson's still
Simpson's still there, yeah. But so far, you know, it hasn't looked great there. It's early. But I would love to have Will Rogers and then have a competition. But I don't know. I'm big on Milroe. I think if he keeps progressing, you know, think of the progress he made from last year to this year. I mean, it is a process, but I think he's a Heisman guy next year, potentially. And if he can, I just think there's just so much more talent there than Will Rogers. But it'd be good to have Rogers as a backup slash guy who can push Milroe.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this goes. Like, you know, obviously, you know, Nick Saban and Terry Saban were there at the press conference. They had their nice little front row seat. There's a great picture that somebody captured of those two where Miss Terry had her eyes closed there. So it looks like she's asleep, which a lot of people had fun with over the weekend. But that's a big job, man. Like the, you know, the I thought the crowd shots of him getting off the plane and all the people behind the fence were pretty cool. That's a big job, and I'm interested to see how he handles it. And like you said, Joe, like I think he's a really good coach. So that's what's lost in all this is, like, everybody's talking about Saban and, like, how daunting it is taking over for Saban. I think DeBoer's a really good coach, so I think Alabama could continue to win. But it's all basically, to me, going to come down to how well he can recruit because, as we know, that has been the lifeblood of Nick Saban's program is they've recruited at an elite level for over a decade. And can Alabama continue to do that with Kalen DeBoer?
Yeah, well, and a couple big points there. One, you know, Heupel, the two South Dakota guys, right? But yep. Heupel played at Oklahoma, coached at Oklahoma, has, you know, he understands what it is to be at an absolute football factory with an insane fan base. And Kalen DeBoer does not. You know, Washington, I mean, for Pac-12 standards, that's a good, great fan base and all that, but it's a totally different level of just the entire world revolves around your football program and around you in the state you're in, right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, and you just don't know what to believe with NIL stuff, but there's a lot of stuff out there from reputable college football reporters talking about the, quote, the Saban discount, right? Which is essentially like Alabama's been able to get away with some big recruitments with not as much in NIL money because and I get it because it's like we win championships and all our dudes go to the NFL here. We develop pros here. There's right. No better place you could ever go if you want to be in the NFL. Also, you know, you're probably going to play for a national championship at least once or twice while here. So, yeah, you can take you could go take another 50K in Knoxville, but come on down here, right? Well, now you just don't know. I mean, if Saban's gone, that a lot of that is gone too. So what does that mean? Now I imagine Alabama's going to figure it out, but it is interesting.
Yeah, no question. Coming up next is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. We'll do that next. Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up at 8:00. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed!
Sit down and shut up.
Who are we gonna crush?
The gods!
Who are we gonna kill?
The gods!
Who are we gonna kiss?
The gods!
Got you.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joe, the floor is yours. I turn it all over to you, my friend.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to start this with an interaction from Twitter last night during the game. So I could wait on this. And you know, actually, we can debate this Wednesday too, okay? Okay. But I think I got to get right to this. So first of all, one of my friends and editors at The Athletic had a tweet right after the refs completely botched what could have been a massive call in the game, which was Rams jump off sides, Lions left tackle Taylor Decker jumps up to basically tag him, and that's defensive offsides. That's encroachment, but they called false start. And so that ended what looked like it was going to be yet another Lions touchdown drive in the first half last night. And they were basically doing whatever they wanted to offensively in the first half against the Rams. And so Daniel Shirley, editor of The Athletic, tweets, how does the NFL have all the money in the world and it can't pay for competent officiating? And in the playoffs, and I quote tweeted, playoffs? And I quote tweeted it, and I said, fair question. And so Paul Kaharsky just has to weigh in, doesn't he? So he tweets at me, you think higher pay creates better officiating? And then there's some accounts I've muted who are getting into it. I don't even know what they said. But he also says, what other industry do you see bleep work and say the solution is higher pay? Well, Paul, yes, they should absolutely be paid more. There should be more invested in officiating. There should be more invested in training. There should be more invested in everything. One call. It didn't end up costing them the game, but one call, two calls, well placed in a game can absolutely determine the outcome. We've talked about it a million times. This is a week ago, the national championship game. I think Michigan would have won either way. But Washington's down a touchdown, gets a huge play to Roma Dunze, a very bad holding call on Washington, negates it. They never get close again. They were about to go in for the tying touchdown. So you can't tell me that these guys don't have a lot of power over the outcome of games. Should they be paid more? Hell yeah, that's a part of a lot of things that need to happen. The average NFL officiating salary is $205,000. The average player salary, $2.7 million. Obviously, that's skewed by some, you know, guys at the top making a ton, right? But
yeah.
Roger Goodell's annual salary, $63.9 million. Dude, fix your freaking officiating. And yes, it's not just pay them more, blindly pay them more, Paul. It's, yes, pay them more, higher standards, more accountability. Speak about calls openly. And I'm not saying full-on presser after every game, but there's got to be more accountability. We want to see what the moves are. Hey, all of this is on the table. The stakes are incredibly high, and we all know that gambling is completely infused in everything now, okay? If Roger Goodell would give up 20 of the $63.9 million between 100 officials, there's $170,000 per official. Okay, $375,000 a year. I mean, let's start there, right? I mean, I feel like NFL officials, considering the control they have over a multi-billion dollar product, should at least make like what a corporate senior VP makes, right?
Yeah.
Like that, like seriously, how could we be paying? And remember, $205,000, there are, you know, crew chiefs who make a lot. There, I mean, you know, it's for a lot of guys, it's like $1,500 a game. And we can, it's just ridiculous. You cannot continue to have this system. And I understand the next CBA is up in 26, and no one wants to give, you know, it's all about the player and the owner money and all that stuff and the split. But my God, people, you want to bitch about this? Then pay up. You want to complain about this all the time and scream about it? Then talk to each other and say, gee, maybe we ought to invest a little bit more of our billions and billions of dollars into these officials. I mean, I'm pointing out Goodell's salary, just whatever. He gets paid by the owners. I mean, let's talk about the profit margins in the NFL and how much these owners pull their hair out when there's a call that screws over their team and then they don't do anything about it. Yes, Paul, they need a lot more money, and that's just the beginning.
Well, one of the things that's been interesting in this discussion, and look, you know, Aaron Rodgers says a lot of things. One thing he has said that I think is worth considering, like, so like Gene Steratore, right? So Gene Steratore, Dean Blandino, these referees that have gone from the field to TV, right? Like you get paid a good amount of money to go be a rules analyst on TV. And I think Dean Blandino in the Packers Cowboys game, they brought him up like twice. Like I think he got on the air like two times to talk about a play that happened. And it's a pretty good job, right? Like you don't have to do a whole lot. You're not talking a whole lot, and you get paid a pretty good amount of money to be on TV, to be like the head officiating rules analyst there. Like you got to find a way if you're the NFL, as you know, a lot of people love the rules analyst thing. I think a lot of that's largely a waste of time because none of these former officials will criticize anything about the officiating that currently goes on, but you've got to find a way to prevent like your top referees from going to be TV analysts. And that's what, you know, Rodgers right. And a lot of other players have talked about of like, how can we get, instead of them going to do TV, how can we get them to continue to remain on the field and be officials? And can you develop like a pool of officiating? And people, I'm not the first one to bring this up, but I think there needs to be more of an investment in like a development program from the NFL to get former players, once they're transitioning from playing, to become officials. And for the pay to be attractive enough to do that, for the training to be attractive enough to do that. Look, it's a hard job. And when things are going right and you're doing your job right as an official, nobody really says anything to you and nobody right. notices anything you're doing. And then when you do things wrong, everybody in the world's yelling at you. So it's always going to be a hard job. But I do think from that standpoint, there needs to be more of an investment from the NFL and more of an emphasis on developing a true like development officiating program, because the one of the problems is right now in the league, there aren't enough good refs. Like, you know, the Torbert crew was doing the Packers Cowboys game yesterday, and we've seen that like they're terrible. So like it's, you got to find a way to have a better pipeline of officials come up into the league.
Yeah, that's absolutely. So you got to pay them. The average to me at this point, I mean, the average salary of NFL officials should be seven figures, and there should be financial incentives for report, just like there's disincentives. You know, obviously you'll miss out on the playoffs. So I guess in a way there's a financial component to that, right? But there should be bonuses too. All of it is investment, and it's actually a joke. And I know it's worse at the college level. We talked about that too. And some of that is just the lack of, you know, it's different conferences just paying these officials and, hey, you know, just drive over here this night, work six nights in a week and be exhausted like college hoops officials. And you'll make good money if you can somehow drive your way all over half the country in a week and a ref a game every night. You know, there should be more investment there, but they got so many issues in college sports right now. Like, it's so far down the list. But the NFL has no excuse. Professional leagues have no excuse, especially the NFL, because it is the absolute king by a mile over everybody else. It's a joke. And again, Roger Goodell's salary is easy to point out, but that's a reflection of how the league's doing, because he does the work for the owners. And so that may sound obscene, but again, that just tells you the money that's available. And people want to complain about refs and then not invest. And people like Kaharsky in NFL media want to, like, you know, just poo-poo the idea more. My God, man, I can't wait to scream at him Wednesday now that we mentioned it.
Coming up next, it's time for Corey Curtis from News 2 to join us. We'll get his thoughts on Wild Card Weekend and his thoughts on the Titans coaching search as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.